At Arizona State University, we've made online education better, smarter, and more personalized so you can go further in your aspiring field.
I decided to pursue medicine once I realized that ASU did have the online program for biological sciences. You're still required to learn the same curriculum. You're still being tested on the same content that anyone would be tested on in person. The comprehensiveness of the program prepared me so well for medical school.
Explore over 350 plus programs at asuonline.asu.edu.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
Hello and welcome to Brokenomics. This episode is going to be for socialists. I think I'm going to entitle it Economics with Crayons. My original conception was I was literally going to have a board with paper and flip charts and crayons, and I was going to write all of this stuff out. But then I remembered that my handwriting is atrocious, and therefore my crayoning is probably completely illegible. So I'm just going to do it with the presentation style again. What I'm looking to do in this episode, because I continue to be dismayed about how the Labour front bench and socialists in general, you know, in academia, in social media, ones that you meet, they continue to be utterly clueless about the most basic possible concepts of economics. So I'm going to do an episode entitled Just For Them. I don't know how many of them will watch it. I will, when this comes out, tag in as many Labour MPs as I can think of and try and get them to share it. But at a very minimum, it will go to several thousand of you, and then you might interact with a number of socialists over the coming years and could perhaps might find some of this useful. What particularly inspired my thinking on this was Labour's latest particularly clever idea, which is that they have realised that they have run out of other people's money again. So what they're thinking is a 2% annual wealth tax on anyone with more than 10 million in assets. This is coming out of whatever body that Neil Kinnock, he was going to be the Prime Minister, the Labour Prime Minister in 1990, was it one or two? But then John Major unexpectedly won, and Neil Kinnock never became Prime Minister, the Labour Prime Minister, which is a bit bloody unfortunate, actually, because we then got Tony Blair in 1997, and had if John Major had not had the temerity to win that 1992 election, Kinnock would have made such a balls up of it that we never would have got Tony Blair. We never would have got, presumably, we never would have got that shift to mass immigration. We never would have got the Blairizing of the Conservative Party and all the ruin that have followed since then. So John Major definitely shouldn't have won that 92 election, but he did. Kinnock is hanging around and he's putting out these ideas. And in this month, July of 2025, he put out this idea, a 2% wealth tax on assets over 10 million. He thinks it's going to raise 11 billion. And we will get into that because that's a key part of the socialist thinking, which is what you do is you dream up a new tax, you work out how many people are eligible to pay it, and then you just assume that they all will, and there is no such thing as incentives or reactions. And they also assume, they make lots of assumptions. We have to go through the episode to really break this down. Interestingly, Richard Bergen, I don't know if any of you know him, but he sort of looks like a turd in a suit. He is a very socialist Labour MP, and he went on Sky News on July the 9th to try and explain the thinking behind this, and to put it mildly, he rather fumbled it. He couldn't answer very basic questions on the proposal, the reaction function, you know, the models that they'd used to put it together, all that kind of stuff. And this was on Sky News. What was it? Was it Sophie Ridges, possibly? Who herself is a bit socialist, and you know, even it couldn't hold up to that.
I couldn't see any of the calculations when I looked at it.
Okay, it's a model advocated by tax experts at UCL and Warwick University, amongst other places. But the £24 billion figure that they came forward with was actually based upon it being at least that, and so it's not an over-optimistic element at all. But so I'm sure that when we're talking,
if I look back at, and again, I'm really not saying a wealth tax. I'm not, because I do understand the arguments for a wealth tax. I really, really want to make that very clear. But just on the figures, you know, in Spain, for example, a wealth tax there generates around 632 million euros a year. That's on assets worth more than a couple of million, tapers up to 3.5%. Well, yeah. In France, for example, the wealth tax led to around 42,000 millionaires leaving between 2000 and 2016, and now they've got rid of it. Well, I just don't understand where the evidence is that we can build billions of pounds worth of taxes through this.
But I am a bit worried because socialist governments do have a tendency of doing wealth taxes. And this idea is resonating with lots and lots of people in Labour and the Labour movement. So it may very well come to pass, not necessarily this precise formulation, but some variation of it, because, of course, they have run out of other people's money and they are going to need to do something soon. The obvious thing, of course, would be to cut spending, but they're not going to do that. So it's only a question of how the taxes come in, not so much whether they will. This proposal, because look, obviously if somebody has created value, taken risks and accumulated capital, the best thing to do is to confiscate it until they leave the country. Now, the big issue here is that Labour just assume the rich are just going to take it. They're just gonna pay the taxes. You have to remember that the UK already has one of the highest marginal tax rates in the developed world when all taxes are taken into account. There's not just income tax, there's national insurance contributions, dividends tax, VAT, capital gains, council tax, inheritance tax. You know, there's a whole bunch of taxes. I probably missed out half of the taxes there, but that's a lot of them. And we are already at the in the situation where the top 1% of taxpayers in the UK pay 30% of all the income tax. So the rich are a significant contribution to them. And you've got to remember that 1% are the most mobile 1% as well. Even the HMRC admits, begrudgingly, that over 50% of tax receipts come from just 10% of taxpayers. And again, that 10% is the most mobile 10%. So this episode is going to be for anyone who thinks that taxing wealth is a simple solution. Spoiler, if you want to get straight to it, no, it's not. Doesn't work. And if it is, if you think that it is, you're probably a socialist, or you know, even worse, an economist who went to the London School of Economics, where economic thinking goes to die, and they churn out statist apparatchiks. So we're going to explain what money is, why assets does not equal income. I know that is painfully basic, but when I started tweeting about this, the amount of people in my replies who genuinely could not distinguish between income and assets, why higher taxes don't equate to higher revenues. Again, socialists, mind blown by that one. Why wealthy people don't just sit on wealth, and why the state does not create prosperity, it merely relocates what other creates. So incredibly basic ideas. Hope I don't bore you with this one, but it is fundamental if you happen to be in government, in basically any function whatsoever at this point. So this is a sort of an economic intervention. Maybe I'll send the Labour front bench a complimentary subscription to Brokenomics to help them along with this. This isn't about opinions. They think it is. These are about fundamental principles that socialists ignore. Incentives matter. Resources are scarce. In fact, there's a book series I quite like called The Culture Series by Ian M. Banks, and it's about a post-scarcity socialist civilization. You know, it's not set in the future. They're aliens, but, you know, kind of, you know, technologically in our far future. And they operate on a socialist system. And I can see that in theory it does kind of work when you have basically no limitations on resources or productive output. In all other cases, when resources are scarce, socialism doesn't work. Wealth is created. It isn't just redistributed. Capital itself is reproductive. Don't worry if you don't know what capital is yet. If you're a socialist, we will get to that. And the intentions behind a policy genuinely don't matter, only the outcomes. And we're going to give plenty of evidence behind that. I mean, we'll get to, France had a wealth tax. It caused 70,000 millionaires to leave. And it cost 200 billion euros in capital. So quite significant. I mean, Sweden abandoned its wealth tax in 2007, noting that it distorted saving behaviour significantly, and it drove out capital. In fact, the UK used to have a top rate of tax of 98% in the 1970s, and it drove, capital abroad. Notable names that you might have heard of, Rolling Stones, David Bowie, a whole bunch of investors, they just left. The Henley Report, which I've definitely cited that in Brokenomics before, Henley's track, high net worth individuals, they predict another 16,000-17,000 millionaires will leave before this tax hits. And their previous reports, if anything, have understated the amount of high net worth individuals who will leave in response to taxes. The socialists often assume that they're still living in the late 19th century, where everyone wealthy just has a, landed estate and a manor on it. These days, a lot of the capital is things that can be relocated very quickly to basically anywhere in the world that's more agreeable. So socialists always assume that the economy is they're very static in their thinking. They always assume the economy is a pie to be divided and not a bakery itself that can be expanded and can serve more and can increase its output. They think that millionaires are basically like stuck in the UK, like serfs, just better tailoring and Range Rovers. They don't understand that these people can be moved. Today wealth is global, it's mobile, it's digitally expressed, and it's often intangible. Things like intellectual property, company equity, crypto even, or just talent like Rolling Stones and David Bowie in the former example. So we need to know what money really is. Yes, you can print it, but you can still be poor if you do so. We've got to get that distinction between assets and income straightened out. Taxing the rich won't raise revenue. It will just basically cause emigration to increase. Wealth is not idle. It's funding your job. It's your phone, it's your energy grid. It's a whole bunch of things that you rely on. And it is not just suspended money that needs to be taken, because the money itself is not the end, something that they completely miss. Oh, and also, and this is really fundamental, price signals matter. Inflation is theft, and government doesn't create jobs, you do. So that should be it. So let's start with what is money? Because you can print money, you can still starve. The socialists will say, okay, why is anyone poor if the government can just print more money? My daughter asked me this, and I understood the question because she's nine and therefore could be excused being confused about this. And the way I explained it to my nine-year-old, and maybe this will work on a Labour front bencher, is that you have to remember that the that the money is simply it's not the economy. It's more like the shadow that the economy casts. So imagine this, okay? In one hand, I've got all of the goods and services that an economy produces. And in the other hand, I've got all of the money for that economy. And the price of everything that is real and tangible is simply, the amount of money divided by the amount of stuff, goods or services. So if you increase the amount of money, all you're doing, you haven't increased the amount of stuff, goods and services, you simply increase the amount of money, and the stuff gets redenominated by the greater amount of money. So think of it like this, and this is how I explained it to my nine-year-old. Imagine that you've got a table, and the table you've noticed isn't big enough. Your family has grown because you've, shipped in a whole bunch of Afghans or whatever it is, but your table is no longer big enough, and you decide you want a bigger table. A socialist solution to that would be to add more inches onto the ruler, so that instead of an inch being, whatever it is, that much, an inch is now gets smaller and smaller and smaller, so you can fit more inches onto a ruler. And now when you measure the table has got much larger. But it hasn't fundamentally helped you in any way. All you've done is redenominate the length of the table by adding more inches to your ruler. That is what money printing does. It doesn't change anything fundamental. And we're still suffering from the, Bank of England's post 2020 QE program. It didn't create wealth. All it did was lead to higher prices, particularly asset prices, and it led to food inflation peaking at about 19%, because all of the stuff is being redenominated by more of the measuring implement, which is the money. So money is a medium of exchange. It's a unit of account. It's a store of value. It is not value in of itself. It is a way of tracking who has claims to real goods and services. It's just the shadow of the economy, but it is not it's the shadow that the economy casts, but it's not the economy itself. Imagine you've got £1 billion, yay, but you're on a desert island. Well, it doesn't do you any good. Doesn't do the remotest good whatsoever, because there is no genuine wealth there. There's no capital. You might be able to put a price on anything on your desert island, your coconut and your patch of sand or something, but it's just fundamentally worthless by itself. Real wealth is output. It is your ability to produce food, tools, skills, housing, technology, all of that stuff. When Germany in the 1920s tried to get out of a situation similar to the one that we are hurtling into by increasing the amount of money, they had three double-decker bus-size money printers running day and night, just churning out money. And it got to the point where people were having to push their salaries home on a wheelbarrow, but they were still starving. Zimbabwe, you've probably all seen that the $100 trillion note that was produced, but that note could not buy an egg. Venezuela, hyperinflation made the money worthless despite everybody having lots of money. So you don't want money. What you want is the things that money can buy. You need things to be produced. And this is coming back to the wealth tax, because this is a fundamental point. The total wealth of a nation is its productive capacity, its ability to make stuff and do stuff that people value. So printing money doesn't create any more stuff. It just redenominates the existing stuff by a ruler that now has more inches on it. So it's a scorecard. In a modern economy, it has millions of people producing billions of goods and services. Money lets them coordinate without barter or without knowing each other. And it works because of trust in that money. I know that if I take payment for something in money, that tomorrow I can spend that on something of which I value. And the socialist tools, such as money printing, or quantitative easing, whatever, the MNT nonsense, I did an episode on that, the universal basic income, it all erodes that trust. And we are getting increasingly to the point of fiat fragility. If that trust breaks, I mean, I've done this in other episodes, but if that trust breaks, then this money that you're chasing won't serve any function at all. Okay, let's start linking this to wealth taxes and socialist policy. When everyone has money, but there's nothing to buy, prices rise and nobody is richer. Okay, so let's get into assets versus income, because this is, again, something that socialists genuinely struggle with. You know, they all imagine that rich people, I don't know if you get this reference, but there's a popular cartoon series when I was a kid of Scrooge McDuck. And Scrooge McDuck had a big vault full of gold coins, and he would dive into it and swim around in it. And this is genuinely, and I say this regretfully, because it is so fantastically, simplistically wrong, but that is genuinely how socialists see rich people, that they just accumulate a big vault of money. So a socialist will say, well, look, there's a rich person like Jeff Bezos or whoever it is. He's got 100 billion. Let's just tax him, take it off him, and with that we will fix everything. They genuinely think that. The problem is that assets, things like, well, it is not a vault of coins that you jump into and swim around. It's business shares, it's property, it's intellectual property, it's machines, it's land, it's art, it's patents, it's processes. Most of a person's wealth is going to be illiquid, subject to market valuation, marginal valuation. Their value is not money, it's just expressed in money. And that is a potential net worth if all of their productive assets were sold and converted into money. Although if you were to actually try and do that in any sort of a hurry, you would tank the price of those assets and you would actually end up getting a fraction of that. So income is what you receive in exchange for work or ownership. So wages, dividends, rents, capital gains, royalty. You know, let's say my wealth was a skyscraper and nothing else. I cannot buy a yacht because I'd have to sell the skyscraper first in order to buy a yacht. And good luck trying to do that every April for the HMRC. Well, and to pay your taxes as well. So imagine it like this. Let's say we've got a £50 million high net worth individual. Keep the math simple. A typical breakdown of that might be 40 million of that 50 is equity in a private company. 9 million might be in real estate, houses and properties. Maybe the property that the business is in, maybe their own private properties and a few other rental properties, or something. Maybe they've got an office block they rent out, whatever it is. And 1 million in liquid assets. And even a relatively small percentage of that will be just sat in a bank account. Most of it will be in investments of some sort. Still relatively liquid, but, you know, not a bank account. So let's apply this latest clever Labour idea. Well, I say it's latest. This is an old idea, but this is the latest resurgence of it. Let's apply Labour's clever idea to that individual. They've now got a 2% wealth tax. That means they owe 1% a year, whether it's liquid or illiquid or tied up in capital. So they've got to find £1 million a year in order to pay this tax. Yes, you could say, okay, fine, they've got £1 million in liquid assets. So they could empty their bank account, they could sell all their investments, they can then pay the tax for 1 year. However, even in that 1 year, that's not viable, because you do actually need some liquidity for whatever it is that you do all the time, or, you know, even paying the next month's wages before the business has generated them, and something will come up. Something will need a new roof. Something will need doing. There'll be some need for liquidity throughout the course of the year. So immediately you're going to have to start selling down capital assets. When you do that, you're then going to trigger a maybe 30, 40% capital gains tax on anything that you sell down. That will no longer be producing income for you. So your income capacity has gone down, meaning that in future, you'll need to sell more capital assets. And and these things are not generating any income from that point forward. So it forces the liquidation of business assets that are no longer going to be producing an income or doing something productive. And so that is going to drive, obviously, relocation. You're not just taxing income, you're taxing the tools with which people use to produce a value. So by going after these capital assets, which are doing a thing, which are producing an income, that are contributing to GDP and all the rest of it, you're having to wear down that real productive output. This is why it's so important to distinguish the difference between money, why I harped on about it for so long. You need to distinguish the difference between money and assets. Assets produce wealth. They allow other people to do things. The reason why the man on the desert island cannot be very productive is because he doesn't have any capital behind him. If he arrived on a desert island that happened to have buildings and diggers and, you know, rope making materials and metalwork equipment and all the rest of it, he could actually be reasonably productive because there's a huge stock of capital there. If he took the capital and threw it into the sea, then his productive output would become utterly diminished as a result. So assets are not static, they're not idle. The high net worth individuals, their capital, their wealth, is deployed in the economy, and it will be deployed in things like factories, tech startups, shipping fleets, data centers, restaurant chains, things that are doing a thing that contribute to the overall economy. These fund, they fund jobs for a start. They create productivity and they create innovation. And, you know, you don't tax a cow. If you're going to tax a cow, you tax the milk that comes out, and not so much that the person milking it starves. You tax a small percentage of the milk. What you don't do is tax the cow itself, because as soon as you start cutting steaks out that thing, all of a sudden its milk output declines very, very significantly after you start taking steaks out of it. So capital isn't a pile. It's not a vault of gold coins. It's a machine. Wealthy people, to be clear, do not have vaults full of gold or cash. Very little of what they have is liquid. You can look at the Times Rich List, and we will in a minute, to give you sort of estimates of value. But these will change daily. Very little liquid. You know, if Mark Zuckerberg tried to sell 20% of Meta overnight, he would crash the price and lose billions in the process. It is not an easy switch between one state, productive capital, and money. It does take time. So what you need to understand is that liquidating assets destroys them in the process, or at least destroys some percentage of their value, possibly quite significantly if it's done too quick.
If you would like to see the full version of this premium video, please head over to lotuseaters.com and subscribe to gain full access to all of our premium content.
Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Warm season's greetings to you all. Fall calls for comfort. Mack Weldon's got essentials designed for cool days and timeless style. Their new Ace line combines comfort with sophisticated looks. Go to MackWeldon.com for 20% off your first order of $125 or more with code MACK25.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.